Okay, I think it's on me now. So I'm the speaker today. I'm Martin Michael Müller. I work in Paris as well, but in the Laboratoire de Physique Statistique at the École Normale. And I want to talk about something today which actually caused my application to this workshop. So I did my PhD. I finished it last year in Mainz in Germany. And during that time, and I still am, but during that time I was particularly interested in interface-mediated interactions. And that's what I want to tell you about, because I think there are maybe things that you can say about it and that may be of some interest to you. So to motivate, maybe before I start, I should say this is a work that I've done in collaboration with Marco Cesano, who is now at Pittsburgh University, Carnegie Mellon actually, and Jamal Gouven, who was here just until Friday, who is in Mexico. Right, so, okay, so motivation. So, I'm interested in biophysics. So, what you see here are pictures of the human cell. So actually parts of it. And you, for instance, see the plasma membrane here, which is the wall that shields the cell from its environment. You see the endoplasmic reticulum, there where the protein synthesis is happening, basically. There you see the Golgi apparatus, which does sorting for the cell, sorting and making sure that the substances go the right way. And finally, you see little membrane bags, also called vesicles, that transport things in the cell. And all these structures are made of membranes. And as we can see, they are pretty curved, right? They are interesting, beautiful structures. And one might ask, how does the cell do this? Why is the membrane structured like that, and how does it do it? And since it's in our world, it has to do something with physics, and that's where we may be interested in it. And another example actually here. So that what you see here is again a cell. This is a membrane. This is the cell wall. And these little dark spots are viruses which managed to escape from the cell. And the question is, how do they do it, right? And I want to talk about one possibility that may cause structures that I've just shown, or cause the virus to leave the cell. One could think of many different interactions that might cause deformations. So one knows that there are proteins in the membrane, and these proteins can do something with the membrane. They can deform it. So this is something we know. So there are, for instance, direct specific interactions that cause the membrane to curve. There may be electromagnetic interactions, and there may be interface-mediated interactions, and I will talk about the last point. I will show you how this could also cause the membrane to bend and do things like endocytosis, vesiculation, and so on. First of all, I maybe need to explain what are interface-mediated interactions. So for this, I will give you an example. Hope that this will work. Okay, it should. There we go. Okay, maybe before I start. So what you see here is two sewing needles on a water surface. So if you put a needle very slowly onto water, make sure that it doesn't sink, then surface tension will take care of the needle being on this water surface. But on the other hand, the needle has some weight, right? So it will deform the surface. It will try to go down. So you will have a curved surface. And so this is the water bowl, and you will see this grid below. And this grid shows you how the water surface is deformed. If you look carefully, you see it here and there. And now I will just let this movie go. So, okay, if I was a real experimental physicist, I would make sure that there's no magnetic effects and no attraction due to other things. But since I'm a theoretician, I'm a bit, more bold maybe, and say, okay, what do we see? And we actually see that these two needles attract. Maybe I show it again. And this attraction is due to the deformation they cause in the surface, in the water surface. So in the beginning it's very slow because the range of the deformation is of the order of millimeters. But then you see it's increasingly fast, and at the end you have this. So how can this be explained? Okay, so let's have a look at a simplified version of the problem. Just imagine you have the two cylinders here at a distance d. Then you can write down an energy for this system, which depends on the distance, right? And since this energy will not be constant, you also have a force. And if you now want to calculate this force, you might think of determining the energy of the system for every possible particle configuration and then derive it with respect to the appropriate particle coordinate to get the force. Right. So, okay. So, and this surface needn't be a water surface. Actually, I will look at the case where this is a membrane and these particles are proteins which deform the membrane. For this, we first have to see how we can develop a model for the membrane. And as you can see, the membrane is not a smooth surface, but it's a bit more complicated. Actually, it's a double layer. It's a double layer of lipids. These red and yellow guys are lipids that shield its hydrophobic tails from the hydrophilic environment. So these are, the red ones are polar head groups. And within this double layer, there are proteins embedded, which are depicted in blue here. And there are also sugars and other stuff that can move in the membrane. Because actually, under physiological conditions, these molecules can diffuse relatively freely within the plane. But they cannot escape easily, right? Since, as I pointed out here, the structure is very thin. It's like five nanometers, and a cell can be like microns. You might think of modeling this as a two-dimensional surface. And this is what I will actually do. And the energy that I need to write, the energy of the total system, can be written as a surface integral over a scalar density h. And this density h, the simplest case you could think of is just having constant energy per area, which is also called a surface tension. And in this case would, for instance, be the water surface if you forget about gravity for a moment. You just have an energy which is the surface tension integrated over its area. For a membrane, it's a bit more complicated. Helfrich in 1973 pointed out that one could write another Hamiltonian, which depends also on curvatures, which describes what has been shown in the following years, the membrane surprisingly well. And just to give you the definitions, so we again could assume that there's a surface tension. Kappa and kappa bar are material constants, which are called the bending rigidity and the Salis-Slay modulus, and these two are curvatures of the surface of our membrane. And in general, one could think of an Hamiltonian which has higher powers of K, Kg, and also derivatives of K. But here I will basically concentrate on this example since it models the membrane pretty well. So let me go on and explain you quickly what the curvatures are, K and Kg. So what's curvature? In one dimension, it's pretty easy to explain it. So I have a line on the surface, on a flat surface, and I want to know what's the curvature in one point P. So what I do is I take a circle and I make sure that this circle has the same tangent as the curve and that it touches as smoothly as possible. And the curvature is then just one over the radius. So the higher the radius, the lower the curvature and vice versa. But in two dimensions, it's a bit more complicated. Because in principle, if I have a surface and I go to one point, I can draw as many lines as I want through this point. And in general, every line can have a different curvature at that point. And it's even worse because I can now choose the plane where I measure the curvature. I can tilt the plane and depending on what plane I choose, I'll get another curvature. Luckily, it turns out that one can describe all this behavior with just two curvatures. And these are the two so-called principal curvatures. are one and are true. They are the extrema, one could say, of all the curvatures one looks at in one point P. And if I sum it up, these two, then I get the K, which is proportional to the mean curvature. Actually, it's twice the mean curvature. And if I multiply it, I get the Gaussian curvature. And here we already see why one chooses this combination of curvatures. So they're actually quadratic in the principal curvatures. And this is why I have to take K squared and K just linear Gaussian curvature. Right, exactly. I don't have any spontaneous curvature, otherwise I would have an additional term. It would be, if I call K0 the spontaneous curvature, this would be K minus K0 squared. Yeah, good point. Okay, now I've explained the energy I want to use. But now to really calculate the force, I have to determine the shape of the membrane for some attachment of the particles. And for this, I need to define a bit the differential geometry I'm going to use. So the surface I'll describe with a position vector x, which is a vector in three-dimensional space and depends on two coordinates, xi1 and xi2. And if I do this, I can write down a basis, the tangent vectors Ea, which are derivatives of x with respect to psi a, and the normal vector n, which is normal to the surface in every point. And I should say that whereas the normal vector is normalized, the tangent vectors in my definitions are not. Just a point. And with these vectors, I can define two tensors which completely describe the surface up to rotations, translations. And these are the metric tensor, which is just the dot product between the tangent vectors, and the so-called extrinsic curvature tensor. For a Euclidean space, this would just be the Kronecker delta. Delta AB. And this one can imagine, if one looks at it, the question one asks is, how does the normal vector change if I go along the surface? Does it change? If it changes, then there's the curvature associated with the surface. And this change I project down onto the surface. So this is one way how one can imagine the curvature tensor. And one can actually show that K and KG that I introduced before are just combinations of these two vectors. So actually, K is the trace, and KG can be written as the determinant of the extrinsic curvature tensor. So with this, I'm able to calculate the shape in ground state, I should say. And talking about ground state, I don't think about fluctuations at the moment, right? And in this case, I say, okay, the variation of my Hamiltonian has to be zero. So I get an Euler Lagrange equation, which is moderately complicated. So it is an Euler Lagrange equation in curvatures. And I have derivatives of curvature in there as well. So to solve it, it's not possible analytically. There are analytical solutions, but only for special cases such as for a translationally invariant membrane. So what one has to do is one has to solve it numerically with all given boundary conditions. And there has been a lot of work on that, actually. So it's just an incomplete list of people that have looked at the ground state and tried. And one particular thing is that most of the people that have looked at this, they have looked at a linearized theory. So they basically neglected this part and wrote K as a function of a height or above a certain plane.
What kind of constraint you should...
At the moment, not yet. I'm not talking about boundaries yet.
It's a sheet.
It can be a sheet, yeah.
Infinite.
It can be infinite, yeah. I talk about an infinite sheet in the end, yeah, but at the moment...
Otherwise, it's not the defined problem. You should define
what volume or what... Sure. No, it's... at the end, I'll talk about an infinite sheet. If I want, for instance, a closed volume, then there would also be a pressure on the right-hand side of the equation. No, that's right. Okay, but as I pointed out, so these people are looking at approximations. Well, I think these two, they look also at the full equation, but all the rest is looking at linearization of the theory and looking what happens between, for instance, two particles, two disks, two cylinders, and so on. But what I want to talk about is I want to really go into the full problem. I really want to say something about the whole equation, about the whole problem. And for this, I need to talk a bit about stresses and torques. So what's the stress tensor?
Is the limit, what's the approximation you're saying they're holding?
Okay, so for this maybe...
see it a little bit better.
Yeah, no problem. So the idea is, the typical thing that people do is the following. This is the membrane. And then they describe the membrane as a height function above a plane, as a function of the coordinates on the plane, x and y. And then they say that the gradient of h is small, which essentially means you cannot have high curvatures. Yeah? If they do this, then the k, all k to the 3 terms here are gone. What's left is the Laplacian of k, which becomes the bi-Laplacian of h, and k itself, which becomes the Laplacian of h. So the equation you have to solve then is something like it's equal to 0. Okay.
I think it's a bit more tricky.
Well,
it's approximation near the flat shape.
Yes.
If not, you should assume that curvature is somehow small, because the energy itself, it's expansion. It's not theorem. It's just expansion over curvature. If it's not small, you should include higher order terms.
Well, you can. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I think.
You cannot restrict yourself only.
Okay.
To quadratic approximation.
No, as you will see later, I need not do this. But
this, of course, not. It's
also
but small.
Yeah, but
you're saying the same thing from different angles.
No, there are two things. There are two things. There's one thing. This is an approximation which relies on this thing, saying that it's nearly flat. But you also have, when I write down the energy, which I just did before, I could write down higher order terms here. So on, k to the 4, and so on. Yeah? And what I'm talking about, here I do an approximation in the end, if you yeah. These I neglect, but in principle, what I will show, I can include them in my. And at the end, I will show, okay, I'll come back to that. Right, so stresses. So the idea is now to look at stresses in the membrane, which will give me forces in the end. If I look at a stress tensor in a three-dimensional body, so let's take just a small cube, delta V, and ask, what's the external force on this cube? Then I can define a stress tensor, which tells me what forces are acting on its facets. Right? And this will have 9 components. For instance, the sigma xy component tells me what's the x component of the external force on the unit area perpendicular to the y-axis. I should say that this is in equilibrium, right? I just imagine that I take away the rest of the body and just look at this cube. And if I now want to know the external force on this cube, I have to either sum, well, or more general, integrate the stress tensor over the area, and this I can rewrite as a divergence of the stress tensor over the volume due to it. This is Gauss' law in the end. But we want to talk about surfaces, so we have to look at the case if there's a surface, and now the stress tensor becomes a 3 times 2 matrix because we lost one dimension. So there's still 3 components of the force acting on this line and 3 on this line, but the third dimension is gone, so in the end I have 6 components. I can do the whole thing. I can integrate now along the contour, and I can rewrite this again as a divergence over the stress. And if there is no external force, this will be 0. That's it, which is clear, right? Okay, but since my membrane is not flat, it's curved somehow, I need differential geometry to generalize this. And one can determine the stress tensor for a membrane, which was done by Jamal Gouven in 2004, or even earlier, 2002. And one can show that it just depends on geometric quantities. in the model I use. So just to remind you, these are the tangent vectors and the normal vector. And we have again extrinsic curvature metric and as well a covariant derivative of the curvature, of the mean curvature. And what's interesting about the stress tensor is the following. It's not only tangential. So if you have a surface tension, a surface with surface tension only, and you cut it somewhere, then the forces that will act are purely tangential. But due to the curvature term in my Hamiltonian, I also have a normal component, which is proportional to derivatives of the curvature. So, yes. And you can do the same for the torque. I won't go too much into this, which is a combination of the torque due to this, to the forces, but there's also an intrinsic torque, which you can determine. And with this, we now want to calculate forces, because in the end, we are interested in forces which are acting on the particles that are attached to the membrane. But well, as I pointed out, you don't have to worry about all this. You just have to keep in mind that if I know the geometry of the surface, I also know the stresses and torques. And consequently, I also know the external force, which is acting on a patch of membrane, for instance. And we've used this approach, for instance, for an experiment where an AFM, with an AFM, the deformation or the elasticity of a membrane was measured. So this is an AFM tip. I apply a force. And if I now want to know this force, I have to integrate over the stress tensor around this tip. As I said before, and if I plug in all these values that I know due to axis symmetry, I get a comparatively simple expression for the force, and I can do the same for the torque. But now let us have a look at a real situation. Sorry? Yeah?
So what you do, you bring in the AFM tip,
yeah?
You push it, and then you have to solve for the shape of the membrane.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I... Yeah, exactly. And an easy way to then calculate the force is just to look at the stress tensor. So I still have to solve the equation. That's right. But it's a... I just have to know what's happening at the pore rim, actually. That's all.
You should know what this tip is doing with membrane. Whether it fixes angle forces or something else, whether it breaks symmetry...
You
should assume something.
Sure. What I assume is that this is an axisymmetric situation.
The point-like force.
No, not point-like. Okay. I mean, this
what
is a
kind of boundary condition.
This is a detail of this experiment. But if you're interested, I can show you. So what we did in this experiment, or in the theory for this experiment, we said that the tip is a paraboloid, which indents the membrane to a certain depth. So this is a substrate. So this is the pore. This is axisymmetric, okay?
And symmetric with respect to up and down.
Axially symmetric, yeah.
No spontaneous curvature. But this is your question, right? Yeah. Exactly. And then we solved the shape equation with the boundary condition, like the Seifert boundary condition. And on the other hand, we know that the membrane mustn't have kinks, due to the fact that it's quadratic in the curvature. And with this, we solved it, and we plugged it in there. That's how it was done in detail. Okay. But now, I want to come back to the original problem. So let's assume we have two proteins sitting on a membrane, and they interact somehow. They apply. We don't know. Is the force attractive or repulsive, for instance? We don't know. But we know there's a force, so we have to keep, to have this as an equilibrium situation, we have to fix the distance between the two. So there's actually an external force that we have to apply. And this external force I can measure using the stress tensor. And since there are no other external forces, I can actually deform the integral, the contour in, where I integrate, in such a way that I can use symmetry, such as, for instance, if the two particles are in a symmetric situation. I can use this, because now I can deform my contour about which I integrate. I send it to infinity, and this comes back to your question. We look at an infinite membrane, and I'm just left with an integral, contour integral in the middle. between the two. So actually, for the membrane, if I use the Helfrich Hamiltonian, I get a force with, or an expression for the force which is considerably simplified. So it just depends on the length difference, well, this I will discuss in a moment, between 1 and 3, and on curvatures in the middle of the between the two particles. Okay, and I assume, okay, for this expression, I assume that the particles can equilibrate in the vertical direction. Okay, so now this is already quite nice. We have an analytic solution. Still, if we want to know some numbers, we have to solve the shape equation. This we haven't resolved. But for a special situation such as for instance, for two parallel cylinders, we can simplify even more. So now we look at two needles on a membrane, right? And in this case, the length difference between branch 1 and branch 3, so at infinity and here in this direction, is 0 because they're just straight lines. But since they are straight lines, my curvature along this line is also 0, and I'm just left with the curvature perpendicular to line 1. But this is a constant, so in the end, I get an expression for the force between the cylinder, which is always negative. And if you know my sign condition convention, then you know that two cylinders on a membrane, they always repel. I don't have to solve anything. Just by plugging in the expression for a stress tensor, I get as the end result that the force is given by minus a half k perp squared, where k perp is 1 over this radius. And this is it.
Sorry, but this is the... Well, you showed at the beginning of the talk, you showed us a picture or a video where you had two needles, they attract themselves.
Yeah.
So you are saying basically they are opposite.
Okay, you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, well, in the other case, you have to... I guess that the simplest explanation I have for this is that you have to consider other forces, other interaction probably.
Yes, this is part of the answer. Okay, I have to rephrase it a bit. Here, I'm talking about a membrane as a surface. And the movie I showed was a water surface. So there are other energies involved.
Yeah.
So whereas I have a surface tension and gravity, which causes the needles on the water surface to attract, I have surface tension and bending energy. And I mean, this is in some sense one of the interesting things. One cannot predict what's happening. One cannot predict what's the sign. And this is in some sense the maybe interesting thing about it.
You're basically saying that from a geometric point of view, interaction energy should be an anti-bending energy, repulsive force if you look just at the geometry of your system. It's basically what you're saying.
Not necessarily. It depends on what's in the energy. So if I just write down H is equal to sigma, so if I have just surface tension, and I put two needles on the surface, I will have no interaction. Because they will just look like this. They won't deform the surface at all. They will just attach with the correct contact angle, which is the contact angle between water and this metal. And this is what you will have. There's no, since the interface is planar, there will be no force between them. What causes the two needles to attract is that I also have a
gravity.
Yeah. And if I now put in energy terms due to the curvature, then I can show that they actually, they deform, but they repel. It's even worse. It's even worse. The shape is the same. If you solve the equations for certain parameters, depending on what you choose for kappa, you'll find that the shape is the same as you would expect for a water surface. But okay.
That means that either there is something more, or there is probably a non-trivial effect with the geometry which is missing.
It's not only geometry, boundary condition, physics behind, how it deforms.
Sure.
No, here it doesn't.
Yes, it does. You assume that there is very specific influence of this cylinder on the membrane.
No, that's not right. So I say, okay, I say the membrane is infinite. That's okay. That's maybe a point where you say that
not only,
it does. The boundary condition here doesn't matter.
It does. If assume that this guy is changed somehow Benzene rigidity. Physically, it's just
okay. If you
in this case, it's totally different.
If you want this, yeah. But it doesn't matter. For instance, at what angle the membrane starts. Yeah. Okay.
So you are basically the specter is a game of fluctuation, chemical or not, probably doing something more.
Yes, that's possible. This is ground state. Exactly.
We're not stating that if you incorporate gravity in your energy, the stress energy, the tensor will be the same.
No, that's I'm not saying. No.
Once you include gravity, there will be a correction plus g.
Yes, exactly. Sure. Sure, but okay, I can.
Yeah.
I can argue here that the system is so small that I can neglect gravity. Yeah, but it's right. If I include it, I can have attraction. Yeah, it depends on the parameters you choose in the end. Okay, so exactly. But now this is a bit strange. Well, it's not strange, but it's maybe not what one wants. So I showed you in the beginning that. These structures of the membranes, right? And one would maybe hope that the particles somehow attract, find together, and deform the membrane. For instance, if I have a protein that curves the membrane, and I have another one, then one might think of they go together and curve the membrane together, right? But here, okay, for the case of the cylinders, I find that they are repulsive. And it's even worse. So for the case of two disks, which is maybe a better, it's a better model for a protein, which imposes a certain contact angle on the membrane. One finds in linear theory a repulsion as well. So the question is there more?
But if they could, merge somehow, are you saying
merge?
So suppose they could overlap the two cylinders.
Yes.
Then they would still repulse.
No, probably it depends how they deform the membrane. I don't think so, but how could they merge? I mean, if you just think of something like this, yeah, and you say that they are in contact, and you just have one particle on the membrane, there will be no interaction.
Well, but there's still something at the bottom, right? There's still some curvature at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, but there is a sort of angle, and it's not smooth. Between that cylinder.
It now depends on boundary conditions, what you impose. If you say, okay, I don't know, I have something like this, but I still have a membrane which deforms here, this is still a... If there's still a curvature in here, then they might still repel. But
so this is only up until they touch?
Sure,
okay.
Sure. I mean, as I mentioned in the beginning, you also have specific interactions, so proteins can actually do something together, right, which is... And there's also electromagnetic interactions that can come into play because there's charge involved. So I'm not talking about such an extreme case. Okay.
Does it really go to contact? I mean, it's probably because then you have to deal with strong curvature, right? Is it true for all
If you believe this expansion, if you believe the expansion up to curvature squared,
okay,
then it's true for all distances. If you include, yeah, okay, I'll come to that point. Well, it's surprisingly good actually. Okay, what did I want to say? Okay,
From my naive point of view, I would have expected that the two objects attract themselves. Because in basically I have in mind that this picture of the two sheep, probably you know that, it's one of the explanation for the Casimir.
But don't forget, I don't talk about Casimir effect.
Yeah, sure.
So if actually the Casimir effect...
That's not mean. It's a classical version if you want the Casimir.
Yeah.
It's a mean field.
No. I was speaking about the two sheep.
The stuff of Bacchus, I mean, that probably doesn't apply because you don't have a symmetry line separating these two things, right? I mean, that's, you cannot separate the system in two. what, simply.
Why not? What's the what's
this argument of Bacher's about reflection positivity should apply, that two similar objects or two equal objects attract each other.
No fluctuations.
There are no fluctuations at the moment.
But Bacher's argument is also about no fluctuations. I mean,
well, I don't know Bacher's argument, so.
Coulomb attraction between opposite charges. So it's
absolutely. It could also affect. Absolutely, you are right. And here you have not opposite charges. You have.
Okay. It's not just fluctuations. It's a completely general argument.
But you take two protons. They will repel.
Yeah, we have opposite charges here. Where you have
this
no charges introduced here.
This in some sense is opposite is equal charges. So, if you want.
Not in your helmet. It's probably the fact that you have a curvature in the middle. I mean, that's.
Yeah. What's the question? Yeah. Maybe you can show me this later. Here one can even think of an analogy which makes it easier to understand what's going on. Because in 1D, the membrane is just a rod which one can bend. So the same Hamiltonian applies also to this thing. And if you now imagine, as you can see, there's a strong force that I have to apply to get this together, to get this bent, right? And this is the middle. So in the middle, it tries to get straight, whereas the bending here is a bit less. So one can already intuitively understand that there will be a repulsion in this direction for the right particle. And since I made this, one knows actually the shapes of these things. These are the Euler elastica. And one can use this for this particular case, and one can actually calculate the force. And here I plotted the force for different angles, contact angles at the cylinder. And these are just nice images of the inner section. So the full solution is the dotted thingy. Okay. But okay, as I pointed out, that's not all. Because somehow I wonder, maybe there are attractions, but how could that be? So we have neglected a few things. As you already pointed out, there are fluctuations. And these are attractive. Okay. And, they lead to an attractive force. But there's more to it. There's also multi-body forces which can become relevant. So normally there are not just two particles on the membrane, and that's the whole story. But you have many particles that are sitting around. And one possibility one can do now is one might think of running a simulation. And this is the last thing I want to show. So what we did in our group was the following. We looked at particles which interact attractively with the membrane. So this part here, it's a sphere basically. And this part here can easily glue to the membrane. And this part is just inert. It doesn't interact. And now we put a bunch of these particles on the membrane and run a molecular dynamics simulation. And we see what happens. I have to stop just to explain what you see. So this is a view from above. You see these spheres which are put on the membrane. So this is the membrane. The blue dots are the polar head groups of lipids. The reds in the middle, these are the hydrophobic tails of the lipids. So one lipid is essentially one blue bead and two yellow beads. Now we just let it go and look what happens. So you see already, two particles attract. Don't know if you've seen that. So they come together. Okay, now we go on. And it's even worse, or it's even more interesting. They're not even attract, but they bud off in parts of three or four. You see? And all this, okay, and then it looks, well, tentatively similar to the picture I show on the right-hand side. So these are, if I say that these viruses are little spheres that like to attract to the membrane with a certain the part of the surface, and I can see that they actually also butt off. For the ones that are interested in details, this is the mutated monkey Pfizer virus. And it's mutated because normally it can leave the cell itself, but here it's made sure that it cannot. So, and this is actually a picture where they have frozen the cell and make a cut and put it into an electron microscope. So,
Mark,
yeah.
In this case, what is more important, the body interaction or the fluctuations?
And this is one question I'd like to ask to you.
Ah, okay.
And this is also the reason, one of the reasons why I applied to this workshop, because we see here that there are grounds that there has to be a mean field interaction, right? But there must maybe other effects as well. And
but in this simulation, what is, say, the temperature scale compared to the elastic energies?
I have to look that up. But you, okay. I can tell you in Leonard Jones units, I think. Yeah. What's that? Okay, maybe let's talk about that later. Okay, so the latest news I have.
No.
Huh? What's that?
No quantum mechanics.
No, sorry, I have to apologize. No H bar. Well, okay. So this is the last slide I want to show, and well, more or less in time, let me come to my conclusions. So I showed you one example of an interface-mediated interactions, but due to the Hamiltonian, to the geometric approach I explained or I showed you in the beginning, I could think of other surfaces as well, which are which have a scalar energy density, for instance. But you can even include vector type terms into your energy, and you can still look at what's happening. But in the context of membranes, interface-mediated interactions are one possible candidate for explaining what's happening with the shapes of the cell. And I try to convince you that a combination of analytical methods, numerical calculations, and simulations has to be applied to understand them. We've seen that the stress tensor can be used for the analytics, and that simulations can tell us a bit about the cooperative behavior. And, that's maybe open for discussion. What about fluctuation-induced effects? I should maybe say there are already papers on Casimir forces between proteins on membranes as well. At least one of the authors is in the audience. And but most of these as well have looked at linearized versions. So they again have looked at small distortions from the plane. So maybe one can say more if one looks at higher deformations. Okay, with this I want to finish. I want to thank Professor Marcus Cesano and Professor Jamal Guven for their help or for working with them. I want to thank the CNRS for the funding. I want to thank the organizers for inviting me and giving me the probability to present what I did. And I want to thank you for your attention. Yeah?
So do you know roughly like with the pin experiment you showed?
The what experiment?
When you had the two
pins. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have a rough feeling when what temperature the fluctuation effects would overwhelm this ground state effect? From some background level reasons?
Well, I didn't think about that. One also has to, well, you also have to think that water may evaporate, right? So I don't know if this will be relevant at all in this context.
I'm more interested in the time. If it was a real time.
That was real time, yeah. Actually, this paper I cited, they have looked at this already very early using supercomputers what they called supercomputers at that time, I guess. And they pretty nicely explain the different phases of the interaction. So you've seen at the end, for instance, they do this sliding together, right? Mm-hmm. And they called it adante, and they used terms from music to explain.
And the needles were, which kind of material were the?
In my case, they were steel. So you could, yeah, you have to make sure if you really, that it's just the only interaction you have. But okay. Yeah?
So why are you asking us about this picture that you showed, whether it's fluctuation induced or mean field?
I mean, okay.
You just do a minimization of your energy numerically rather than fluctuation.
Actually, okay. So the story has two answers. First answer, when I applied to this conference, it was not clear what's the effect.
So now you know that.
So I just got into contact with the first author of one of the papers who's been following and exactly doing what you suggested, and he said that for the strong curvers that I have just shown, it seems to be a ground state effect. It seems to be. Yeah? They've used surface evolver to calculate interactions, ground state. But we also made simulations where the deformation was much smaller. And for these deformations, it's not clear. He still has no coherent results. So it could, there must be an interplay between fluctuation, whatever, body, other forces. Yeah. So this is what I can say at this point.
But you can also estimate the direct force using your formula, because you can,
yes.
You know the bending energy, you know the curvature, so you can estimate that.
Yes.
The estimate of the fluctuation in used forces is just kt times area squared over distance to the 6 hours.
Okay, yeah, that's possible. We tried. Okay, we just had a look at the ground state. We didn't think about the fluctuation induced forces at that point when we thought about this. But so what you get is, if you look at, okay, you can look at the cylinders, which is a thing where I know the solution. And I can just mimic these cylinders with a trough, something like this, and I put it into a box. And there we calculated the force using the formula and using what we do in the simulations, so just calculating. And there were in agreement, right? Up to errors, right? Within the error bars. For the spheres, it was not exactly clear. So there must be another. At the point when I was still involved in this, they didn't overlap exactly. So there must have been other forces as well. So, but I haven't done this estimate you just suggested. Yeah. Okay, so thanks again, and maybe we should switch microphones.